Good afternoon, good evening, good morning to those of you who are up late or early in Europe and Australia and New Zealand. Welcome with all my heart to our seven-part series, Your Heart is the Heart of the Divine, the Tantric Teachings on Self-Recognition. Of course, this statement, Your Heart is the Heart of the Divine, is a profound truth. It's at the heart of all the great Enlightenment traditions, and we're going to be unpacking it through one of the pithiest and most significant of all the non-dual texts, which also happens to be, I would say, my personal favorite, the Heart of Recognition Sutras, known in Sanskrit as the Pratyabhijna Hridayam. Really difficult word, I know, that you'll all be pronouncing perfectly by the end of this series. The word hridayam in Sanskrit means heart. That is the physical heart, but also the essence, the interior. Abhijna means to cognize or to know, and prat means once more or again. So pratyabhijna means to recognize or to know again what was actually already true. And this process of recognition, which, of course, is one of the things that happens to us constantly when we put together something that we saw as true but didn't realize we knew personally. And There are many, many stories about this. In fact, it's traditional in this teaching to begin with a story about recognition. So I'm going to begin with a story about recognition. And as I welcome you, I'd like to ask you to just contemplate this story. The story goes that in the times before time, some terrible demons had stolen the earth, taken the earth down to the depths of the ocean. And so the gods called on Lord Vishnu, who tends to come to the rescue of gods and humans in situations like this, according to Indian mythology. They called on Lord Vishnu to come and defeat these demons. But the thing was, these demons were brothers. They loved each other. And therefore, no one had ever been able to defeat them. So Vishnu did what any sensible deity, masculine deity, would do under those circumstances. He took the form of a beautiful woman whose name was Mohini. Mohini means the infatuating one, the deluding one, the one whose nature is Maya. And in that beautiful form, he came into the garden of the demon kings, and he just stood there among the flowers. Everything in the garden began to bend towards this beautiful female form, and of course, so did the demons. So they came out of their palace, they stood in front of Mohini, and they both begged her to marry them. And Mohini, who looked at them, she said, "Well, I can't marry both of you, so why don't you both decide who will have me, and my suggestion is that you have a fight." So the two demons began to fight, and because they were evenly matched, they ended up killing each other. And Mohini, Vishnu, in the form of Mohini, looked down at these two dead demons and said to himself, "Wow, these two big, strong demons died for love of me. I must be something. I must be gorgeous." So he ran to a neighboring pool, looked at himself, herself in the mirror, and saw her own face, fell instantly in love with it, and then thought to himself, "Since I am the most beautiful woman in the world, I should have the greatest husband in the world. And who is that? It must be Lord Shiva." So quick as a flash, Mohini transported herself to the heaven of Shiva, and she stood in front of him, looking so beautiful that nobody could ever have resisted her. And she said, "Oh Lord, I am Mohini. I am the most beautiful woman in the world. I've come to marry you." And Shiva looked at her and said, "Excuse me? You're not Mohini. You're not even a woman. You're Vishnu." And Vishnu suddenly recollected himself. He goes, "Oh my God, how stupid of me. I got deluded by form," which is pretty much the story of our lives. And in that moment of recognition, through the instructions of Shiva, who was acting as the guru, Vishnu was able to remember or to recognize who he really is. So pratyabhijna means to know again what you actually always were, what you already are, but have forgotten or maybe didn't even realize that you were. And these 20 sutras are the cliff notes to a doctrine that aims to show you the absolute identity of your heart, your awareness, in fact, because the word hridaya, the word heart, in the tantric teachings also means awareness, consciousness. So these sutras aim to show you the identity between your awareness, your own common or garden variety awareness, with the great awareness, the self-aware, creative, joyful goddess consciousness, or as she's called in the tradition, Chitti Shakti. Chitti means awareness, and we'll talk more about that in a moment, but not limited awareness. Awareness, consciousness, that is utterly and completely free, that is without limits, that is infinitely powerful, and that has the capacity to know, to will, to do anything and everything that can be imagined and that cannot be imagined. So when we say your heart is the heart of the divine, what we are saying at a deeper level is your awareness is the creative awareness that is at the heart of everything. As those of you who studied with me in the past will know, this journey that we're on together aims at creating a template and a series of practices as well as teachings in which you use an empowered sacred text to look at your life and to look at yourself day by day, week by week, as a way of continually, let's say, priming yourself, soaking yourself in the awareness of non-duality. Not only of non-duality, but of fully empowered non-duality. And what that means is that along with reading the text and the assignments that I'll give you, which will contain kind of nuggets of the text, and working with a partner, which you're invited to do, you'll also be offered a lot of different exercises and meditation practices that are aimed at giving you the opportunity to see the sacred nature of your own reality. The aim here, again, is to give us, all of us, and this certainly goes for me as well, an ever-deepening experience of the truth about yourself, about your life, and especially about what you call your own mind, your own consciousness. The truth, that truth, can only be realized experientially as a non-linear, non-conceptual recognition. It's not something that the mind can figure out, although the mind can have a really good time trying to figure it out, and trying to figure it out is actually one of the practices which lets us start to segue into the non-conceptual experience. And what that means, of course, is that it really helps in this process to have a teaching, an overview, that points us towards that truth. In India, philosophy is called darshana, which literally means seeing. We use the word darshan, as again, I think most of you know, to refer to a special kind of vision, of seeing, that connects your senses and mind to a sacred form, usually to a deity or to a saint. But it's also true that this capacity for seeing and knowing also applies to sacred teachings. Teachings that give darshan are teachings that bring us into the immediate presence of truth. And that's why in India, philosophy is called darshan, because these teachings, these texts, which come out of the enlightened experience of sages, and sometimes are considered to be direct revelations from the divine, these teachings will bring us into the immediate experience of truth. They will gradually soak into our mind, sort of like a tea bag soaks into water, and subtleize consciousness so that consciousness can begin to see through the thicket of thoughts and perceptions that ordinarily keep us mundanized, and really start to see its own power and majesty and beauty. This process can happen instantaneously. I'm sure it has for some of you. And yet to stabilize it, it usually takes a continual return and coming back to it again and again. And we'll be describing and discussing how that happens as we move through the veil of turbulence and confusion and mixed messages that we call Maya. This darshana, this philosophy, begins to replace our old stories, our binding stories, with stories that actually expand our consciousness, literally expand our consciousness. As you know, in Indian philosophy, there are three words that are commonly used to describe the essential reality, and these words are Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means a beingness, existingness. It's the fact that reality is ever existent. It is never lost. It's never broken. It always exists. Chit meaning awareness, intelligence, that is always present in all times, in all places, and in all states. And Ananda, blissfulness, which refers to the fact that at the heart of everything and as the source of everything is blissfulness. And these three words, Sat, Chit, Ananda, are, let's call them non-theistic words for what in other traditions we call God or Tao or Allah or Brahman. And in other words, they describe the actual felt experience that is our essence. So the Pratyabhignihridayam offers us a method. It's actually a jnana yoga method, a method that uses intellect and also a process of kind of deconstructing our belief systems in order to see the truth. There are philosophical arguments embedded in it, though we won't be getting into those too much in this class. But above all, they are what the Buddhists call pointing out instructions. In other words, they intend to point out again and again and again the absolute identity between two entities that appear different. Your individual mind, your own awareness, and the vast infinitude of the formless source that we might call God or Chitti Shakti, but which, let's say for now, is the presence that was prior to the Big Bang that to physical sciences unknowable suchness that powered the explosion into manifestation that began this universe and which continues to maintain it. So what we're going to be doing is using this text to point out to ourselves who and what we are, who and what our heart is. So we're going to begin by chanting one of the mantras on your sheet. And these are mantras that invoke goddess as the victorious one, as Kali, as Durga. The words are on your sheet. And in just a couple of minutes, you'll hear the voice of a Brahmin named Vishal Khera chanting these words. You're invited to sing along with him. And after we chant, this is the first chant we'll do. We'll also be doing the introductory chant to the text a little bit later in the class. But after we sing this, we'll dedicate our practice, and then we'll create an intention for our work together. So Deb is going to put on this chant, and it's the second chant on your sheet.
Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namo Mangalakali Bhadrakali Kalpalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute.
Salutations to she, who is the victorious one, who is supremely auspicious, who devours time, who controls life and death, who wears the garland of skulls, who is the great protector, the ever auspicious, who compassionately bears all, who supports all, who receives offerings, who is Chitti Shakti, the power of absolutely free consciousness. And you can say these words silently to yourself after me as we dedicate our practice. May all beings in all worlds experience happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May the Supreme Goddess, Chitti Shakti, who is one with her beloved Lord and consort, Shiva Mahadeva, reveal herself to us as our own self, present in every perception and in every moment. May she liberate us from confusion so that we can experience her liberating radiance and freedom through all the pathways of our life. I took that a little fast, so let's go back. May the Supreme Goddess Chitti Shakti liberate us from confusion, reveal herself to us as our own self. May we experience her liberating radiance and freedom through all the pathways of our life. So take a moment now to feel into your own heart, either the physical heart, because you can actually find this awareness in the physical heart, or the subtle region behind the breastbone, which is where we usually find the spiritual heart. Just let the inhalation bring your attention behind the breastbone into that region. And with the exhalation, see if you can feel it releasing, expanding, softening. And with the next inhalation, imagine that the breath drops this thought, my heart is the divine heart, into this center within your body. And with the exhalation, feel that the sensations that arise from holding this thought spread through the whole heart. Inhale, my heart is the divine heart, into the region behind the breastbone. Exhale and sense the felt experience that arises when you hold this thought in consciousness. How does it feel to hold this liberating thought, my heart is the divine heart? the heart is the place where inside and outside, human and divine, meet and merge. And its corollary, which means the same thing, your awareness is divine awareness, which we'll be radically unpacking. Is often counterintuitive for us, because even though many of you here are familiar with this teaching, many of you have read it and heard it and perhaps even experienced it, when we're in our ordinary state of awareness, the heart feels like it's inside the body, that the rest of the world is outside the body. And that's why, to truly grasp the vast and divine nature of your own heart and of your own awareness, we need three things, and these three things are super important. First, we need a teaching that can start to deprogram your ordinary mind, your ordinary way of thinking, and give you a way to conceptualize the possibility that you are unlimited. Second, equally, if not more important, a practice that lets you actually sink into your own consciousness, surrender your thoughts and ideas about yourself into their source, which is the field of awareness that we call consciousness or mind. And third, we need grace. We need the revelatory intention of Supreme Consciousness to reveal you to yourself. The practice that we're doing now combines these three factors, and it actually contains in the verses, especially when we learn how to hold the verses contemplatively, it actually contains within it all the ingredients we need. It contains the suggested practices. It contains the truth in this form. And it contains the grace that has been, shall we say, injected into it by the lineage and ultimately by that one who inspired the teaching, who brought the teaching up from the depths of consciousness and brought it through the mind of a 10th century sage called Rajanaka Kshemaraja. And what I want to say, and what I believe you'll experience in the course of these 7 weeks, is that the Shakti of self-revelation, which in Shaiva tradition is called anugraha or grace, that is the Shakti of awakening, has provided this text as a direct entry point into grace itself. And in my experience, and I've been studying this text for about 45 years, is that when we allow it to, what we begin to experience is the longing, let's even call it the drive that Chitti Shakti has to awaken us, to reveal to us what we are. So this book was written by Rajanaka Kshemaraja. The word Rajanaka is actually not his name, it's an honorific that was given to adepts, to accomplished sages in the Kashmiri tradition in medieval times. It means little king, and is a way of saying all of us are little kings or little goddesses or little Shivas. So let me just say something about Kshemaraja, who was a very important writer and teacher. He was actually an 11th century Kashmiri, a close student of the famous sage Abhinavagupta. And I would say that Abhinavagupta's is comparable to Aristotle in Greek thought or Luria in Hebrew wisdom. He's a major figure who codified the teachings, brought together the teachings from different aspects of the tantras, wrote a book called Light on Tantra, which is perhaps the most significant compendium of tantric thought we have. So Kshema was his close student and was the heir to a tradition and a lineage that is generally called Kashmir Shaivism, but which Abhinavagupta named Trika, Trika meaning three, and it's called Trika or three because it deals with sets of threes. For example, the triad of divine awareness, which is unlimited, human awareness, which is limited, which is the second part of the Trinity, and the path that leads back to freedom. It's another way it describes itself is that it's the Trika, the Trinity, is a tradition that describes God, the Absolute, the bound, who is called Pati, which means the Lord, the bound soul, or the Pashu. Pashu means someone who is bound with a rope, which is, according to the tradition, our condition until we get who we are, and the world itself. So what we are going to look at in these weeks is the nature of the Absolute, of God, the nature of human bondage, and also the nature of the world. We're also going to look at the nature of God, the nature of limitation, and the nature of the path. So what Kshema says at the very beginning of this text is that he's going to give us the very essence of the teachings on recognition, and he describes his target audience. This is a book, he says, for people who are devoted to the path, who have open, receptive minds. The word he uses is childlike, minds that are not arguing, but really open to receive this truth. It's for people who have not studied philosophy in an academic way, though I know some of you have, but who nonetheless deeply long to be immersed in divine consciousness, to actually become one with God. The word for that longing, for what we long for in the tradition is samavesha. Sama meaning same, and vesha meaning divine, meaning Lord. So the word samavesha, which you're going to hear again and again, means that complete immersion in absolute consciousness. That is the goal, which is what Shaivism calls enlightenment or self-realization, literally recognizing that you are not different from the divine. And the longing that he refers to, of course, is that deep drive that arises within us that impels us to stay on the path regardless of what comes up in our lives, because on some level that inner longing tells us that what really matters is not your worldly success, although in Tantra worldly success is actually one of the goods of life and it's not dissed in any way, but it's the longing for that immersion in the divine that actually keeps us going. And Kshema also says, this is really important, that this longing can only be the result of an inner awakening, of an inner, actually, explosion of grace. And in the tradition, this awakening is called Shaktipat. Again, that's a word that's familiar to some of you, and we'll describe it more fully. Shaktipat literally means descent of Shakti, of power, which is assumed to come from a higher or more expanded world into our lives. That that awakening is often associated with the awakening of Kundalini, which is how it sometimes happens. But essentially, it's the dramatic shift in your priorities that really every spiritual and religious tradition since the beginning of time has recognized. The most dramatic in the Western tradition, of course, being Paul's experience on the road to Tarsus, where he was blinded and awakened by the voice of Jesus speaking to him from out of the ether. That awakening in the tantric tradition is not just an intellectual awakening, but a deep shift that impacts all levels of your being, which is, of course, how it happened with St. Paul as well. So I would say most of us fit into that target audience. And I just want to say on a personal note that this text, the Pratyabhijñasaradhyayam, as I think you'll discover, is actually a template for the spiritual journey as it's understood in Tantra. I first received this teaching from my guru, Swami Muktananda, who actually discovered it after his own enlightenment and recognized it as the best description that he had ever read of what his own journey had been. He taught it because for him it offered a perfect map of the journey. And it's a map that starts and ends with self-recognition, with the recognition, I'm going to keep saying this again and again, that this entire apparent reality is a magically empowered, wildly paradoxical, artistic display of divine imagination that's created by a conscious being for her own delight, and that its purpose is to allow her expression as your consciousness and my consciousness to self-recognize. So in other words, the whole purpose of this universe, as this text says, is for the limited consciousness that we experience as me to begin to realize who she is and where she comes from, and then to begin to live in the world that is empowered by that realization. So part of the purpose here is really to recognize that we're not minor characters. We are actually the intelligence behind it all. This is an enormously potential, creative. This gives us an enormously creative capacity. Because it tells a story that has an arc that I believe is the arc we need in order to understand who and what our life is about. It's a very dramatic story. It's the story of how Goddess manifests universes within herself, hides her real nature from herself, and then reveals herself inside our bodies. It has moments of despair, as we'll see, and confusion and struggle. And it allows us to see our life inside this arc. It also tells us that everything is fundamentally all right. The verse that I offered you in the first letter I wrote about this class says, stay where you are without worrying, for the goal is assured. And who but the self can teach this, and to whom? In other words, you are already that. You are already Shiva. You're just on a journey that's going to allow you to recognize it sooner or later, hopefully sooner. And again, I want to say that it's very important to have a story that does this, because narrative is really crucial. It determines everything about how we see ourselves and how we see others and how we see the world. A story, a really good story, lodges in the subconscious mind. and really determines our path. So whether it's the stories, the family stories, whether it's the story of our nation state, or the story about the global economy, or the story at the heart of a religious tradition, you know, the American story, the story that this is, this country is a democracy and that it's a land of limitless opportunity, which is obviously not completely true, nonetheless has created what we could call the American character, which is very much a, you know, an optimistic can-do character. And it's drawn people from all over the world who look for opportunities and who believe that they can take advantage of them. The story at the heart of the Abrahamic traditions, the Adam and Eve story, you know, that story about how God created a man and then seeing that the man was lonely, took one of the man's ribs and made a woman, and then sometime later got angry because they had disobeyed his orders and kicked them out of the paradise they'd been living in. That story has essentially skewed the religious experience of thousands of, you know, a couple of thousand years of Western inner experience towards seeing ourselves as fundamentally sinful. It's very much a particularity of the Western Abrahamic consciousness. And, of course, the Buddhist story about the prince who grows up without ever seeing old age or sickness or death has a moment when he realizes that there is suffering in the world and is inspired by that realization to give up his life in the palace, become a seeker, and ultimately realize the truth by sitting under a tree and vowing not to stop meditating until he sees the truth about himself. And Kshema's version of this, of the story of life, does something which is actually quite radical in the religious traditions and that makes it particularly relevant to this revolutionary moment. It tells us that God is not somewhere else, that some God somewhere else created us. It tells us that the entire process of life is being created moment to moment inside awareness itself, an awareness that is not just transcendent, it's not just somewhere on high, but that it actually is embedded within us, can be experienced within us, and drenches our being, drenches our body-mind in grace and freedom. And another thing about Kshema's version of this story is that the one who manifests it all is not a patriarchal masculine deity, but goddess. Goddess who is inalterably one with her consort, her beloved, her masculine, and who represents, who is, who carries the creative power and freedom and awareness of God. So the goddess Chitti Shakti, the goddess of awareness, creates not only these worlds, but also your own experience, your own inner experience moment to moment through the mind and senses. One of the gifts she gives us is the capacity for recognizing that boundaries between inside and outside are deeply permeable, and that the world that we experience is completely imbued with the same divinity that divine awareness carries. And again, as many of you know, one of the characteristics of Tantra, especially of the recognition traditions, the Pratyabhijna traditions, is that it doesn't ask us to deny worldly life. It is a genuinely integral teaching, which means that that in this tradition, we both recognize reality as transcendent, untouched, unmoved, but we also recognize its absolute immanence. In other words, the divine in Tantra is seen to be both beyond the world and also completely, it's hard to convey this in words, but it's soaked into the physical world such that divinity is utterly inseparable from the table, from our skin, from the air, from everything, and even from those aspects of the world that we would like to reject. So one of the great poets, actually let me go back. I would say that one of the core truths that we start to get from studying the recognition sutras is that our lives themselves, because our bodies, minds, associations, and life itself are all imbued with divine consciousness. And there's another piece to it, which, again, we'll discuss in detail, but because our experience of life, which seems to be unfolding outside us, because what the tradition says is that our actual experience of life is happening inside. It's happening in awareness, and that awareness is us. It doesn't mean that the world stops being present when we close our eyes, because obviously there is awareness. As I said, this is not something that the mind really grasps, but it happens to be true. There is awareness alive in every particle of this universe, including what we normally think of as insentient. However, the human consciousness is uniquely positioned to realize that, which is what's special about human beings. So essentially, what this tradition tells us is that our lives are the vehicle, are the path through which we discover the truth about ourselves. One of the great poets of this tradition wrote, I think this is my favorite tantric statement, he says, "This is the path where poison becomes nectar and worldly life becomes the abode of liberation." Another great poet says, "It's said that where there is liberation, there is no worldly pleasure, and where there is worldly pleasure, there is no liberation. But on this path, both pleasure and liberation come and sit in the palm of your hand." And I can tell you from personal experience that this is really true, not bullshit. I first heard this teaching a long time ago in 1974, and I'm going to tell you my first experience of it, which actually is an experience of how this teaching impacts your physical life. So I'd come to New York to spend time with my guru, whom I just met. And I was a journalist at the time. I'd been living freelance assignment to freelance assignment. And a payment that was due me, which I was going to live on, hadn't arrived. So one day I found myself with the rent due and not enough money to pay it. And I panicked. I was wandering around trying to find someone to buy my jewelry or someone to lend me the money. And I stopped off at my apartment, where another student of my guru's happened to be crashing, and he was a Sanskrit geek, as it happened, and he met me at the door carrying this skinny little book, which happened to be the Pratyabhijna Hridayam, and he opened the door and he said, without even saying hello, he said, listen to this. This is so cool. He said, universal consciousness in total freedom manifests this universe on her own screen. Universal consciousness in total absolute freedom manifests this universe on her own screen. I said, what? He said, yes, consciousness is constantly becoming everything and it's becoming you right now. Do you get what that means? And I heard that line and something shifted. This knot of fear inside my heart relaxed. Instead of being scared and paralyzed, I literally felt my heart and mind expanding. And from within that newly relaxed consciousness, an unexpected and totally appropriate solution to the problem arose. It was very mundane, very practical, nothing supernatural. I know you've had this experience where you're just, you know, you have no idea what to do. You're at a complete impasse, and then something surfaces out of this field of your own consciousness that is beyond what you could have thought of yourself. And the miracle in this, and it felt like a miracle actually, was not that something supernatural happened, but that a completely natural expansion of consciousness happened, which ever since then has become a kind of fuel that I have followed, that I have turned towards in every situation in life. Universal consciousness, chitti, of her own free will, swatantriya, is the cause of the manifestation of everything. Sanskrit, chittihi swatantra vishva siddhi hetuhu. And that's the first verse of the Pratyabhignatradaya. Chittihi swatantra vishva siddhi hetuhu. And the second verse, svechaya swabito vishvam unmilayati. She unfolds this universe upon her own screen. So we're going to unpack those teachings. We'll return to them again and again. These two sutras are the core, the crux, the beginning of this text. And I want to just suggest that we take the implications of this for a moment. And as we do, we're going to chant the other verse. It's actually verse 3 on your chanting sheet, which happens to be the introduction to the Pratyabhignatradayam. It's an invocatory verse that is customarily chanted. You know, every great text usually starts with an invocation. This is the invocation for the Pratyabhignatradayam. And if you read the translation, it says, salutations to Lord Shiva. Shiva, one of the translations of the word Shiva, is that which underlies, that which is the ground, the basis. The word also means goodness, auspiciousness. So Shiva is the underlying light behind all that is, who eternally, through his Shakti, who is, remember, the goddess, the heroine of this text, eternally brings about the five processes that are intrinsic in every moment of the universe. The five processes being manifestation, maintenance, reabsorption, concealment, and self-revelation. Who gives the supreme knowledge that the self, a mass of awareness and bliss, is the highest reality. So let's chant. We'll chant this verse 3 times. Then I'm going to unpack it a little bit because it really is very basic to everything that we're going to be talking about. And then we'll begin to look more deeply into the implications and the experience of Chitti Shakti. So you can find a posture. I'll chant first, and you can chant along with me or chant the second version. Namah Shivaya Satatam Panchakritya Vidayine Chidananda Gana Swatma Paramartha Vabhasine. Namah Shivaya Satatam Panchakritya Vidayine Chidananda Gana Swatma Paramartha Vabhasine. And one more time, there should be an A at the end of Swatma after the M in the third line. Namah Shivaya Satatam Panchakritya Vidayine Chidananda Gana Swatma Paramartha Vabhasine. So, little translation, Namah means I bow to, but it also means I become one with, which is of course, crucial to this understanding. Shivaya, we know who that is. Satata means eternal. Sata means eternal. Pancha Kritya are the five acts. Pancha means five. Kritya means action. Vidayane, who brings about, who makes manifest the five activities, which we'll talk about in a moment, whose nature, this is my favorite part of this verse, is Chidananda Gana, a mass of awareness and bliss. A mass of awareness and bliss. Who reveals the Paramartha, the highest reality, and who is the highest reality, who gives us the supreme knowledge, Vibhasine, that yourself, which is a mass of awareness and bliss, is identical with the highest reality. So I want to take a moment to kind of go through the esoteric tradition that this verse points to. And if you actually downloaded that little chart that Deb sent you the other day, you see that there's a sheet which sort of explains this or lists the activities that comprise these five acts. These activities are manifestation. In Sanskrit, the word is srishti, meaning the manifestation of forms within consciousness. The whole essence of this tradition is that nothing can exist outside of the divine. So it's not that anything is created. What Chitti Shakti does, what Shiva Shakti does, is manifest within herself. I'm going to refer to her from now on as goddess. We should understand that Shiva Shakti, God, goddess, are inseparable. They're one. But this text is a goddess text. It actually is it's an act of homage to the feminine aspect, the creative aspect of consciousness. So we are going to talk about her as we can talk about God as her for the rest of the evening. So she manifests these forms. She unfolds these forms within herself. She maintains these forms. The word sthiti means, as yoga students, those of you who are yoga students, which is many of you, know this word sthiti well. Maintains these forms. She stabilizes these forms. Sthiti means stable. She then reabsorbs them. The word is samhara, which means bringing them back into the source. So all forms eventually are reabsorbed back into the consciousness that is the source of everything. And then these last two acts of the divine are, I think, the most interesting from a spiritual point of view. One of them is concealment. The Sanskrit word is tirodhana. She hides herself within the atoms of the world so that the world appears finite and separate. One of the really interesting things that's come out of contemporary quantum field theory is this recognition, of course, about the way subatomic particles behave in the laboratory, which is to say they behave intelligently. And one of the very famous contemporary physicists, Freeman Dyson, talks about how when you look at a subatomic particle under a microscope, you realize that it's making choices, which is really wild. In other words, the liver cell is making a choice to show up in a particular way. And he says it's almost inescapable to see the behavior of these subatomic particles as exhibiting mind, as being having a mind. In other words, what he's seeing is the fundamental intelligence inside matter, concealed inside matter. We don't see that, the subatomic particles in this table or this computer are making choices. The table looks very hard and, dense to us. It's a completely counterintuitive recognition. It's the effect of tirodhana, of concealment. And this concealment process is, it's called veiled non-locality in some schools of quantum field theory. In other words, the fact that there is no separation between anything is veiled. The fact that particles here in North America are actually affected by particles in space, for example, is veiled. We don't know that. We don't see that. So that's just one of the ways that concealment works. And, of course, the ultimate concealment is our non-recognition of the nature of our own awareness. And then the fifth act is revelation, which in Sanskrit is called anugraha. I like to translate that word anugraha as that which grabs the limited individual. The word anu means atom or atomic or tiny, and graha means grabber. So anugraha is the power of grace that grabs hold of our consciousness and shifts everything so that consciousness is able to recognize that it pervades everywhere, that everything that we experience is appearing within it, and that our consciousness is not different from the great consciousness. So that those five acts, which pretty much, according to the tradition, are happening all the time, everywhere. The fact that quantum field theory, quantum mechanics, has this concept of veiled non-locality, indicates that these processes are actually going on every level of experience. They're going on inside the mind, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And they're going on inside the physical universe. So, and what Shaivism says, remember, this is a non-dual universe. Therefore, what happens here also happens there. What happens in God's awareness also happens in our awareness. That as here, so elsewhere. Big truth. So that's who we're talking about. We're talking about that consciousness which creates, maintains, absorbs, and ultimately dissolves, which conceals itself and then reveals itself ultimately. So with that introduction, which actually calls on the consciousness that has become all this, Kshema Raja begins his treatise. And what I'd like to do now is begin unpacking the first sutra. Chitti Svatantra Vishva Siddhi Hetuhu, which means we actually have several translations of it. Sanskrit, as many of you know, is a language that can be interpreted with different English words. The one that I'm working with at the moment comes from Chris Wallace's translation. It says, awareness, chittihi, free and independent, is the cause of the performance of everything. Another translation, this one by Jayadev Singh, which is also on your sheets, says the absolute chitti, consciousness, out of its own free will, is the cause of the manifestation, dissolution, maintenance and dissolution of everything. And Kshema Raja then goes on, and Swami Shantananda in his translation, which is in a book called The Splendor of Recognition, translates it as like this: consciousness in her freedom brings about the attainment of the universe. These translations may seem slightly different, but they're talking about the same things, and I want to just talk about, in the classic fashion of unpacking a Sanskrit text, I want to talk about why these words are so important and why this sentence is so crucial. So the word chitti refers to consciousness in a very different way than we understand consciousness as an English word. In fact, everyone who knows Sanskrit well says that consciousness is not really a great term for translating chitti, because consciousness implies an object of consciousness, you know, that in human terms we are conscious of something. But chitti's consciousness, another word for this quality of consciousness, is chaitanya, which means absolute consciousness. Chitti's consciousness is only conscious of itself. That is, this is consciousness with no object, consciousness which is pure divine intelligence, absolutely free, completely unlimited. And this idea of freedom, svatantriya, is one of the core ideas that we'll be following, and it's very important for us because we're talking about the absolute non-duality of consciousness. So chitti is utterly free, and when she manifests a universe, she does it in complete freedom, which means that she can become anything. She can become anything that can be imagined and anything that can't be imagined. In other words, there are no limits on her freedom. And of course, as limited forms of consciousness, which is what we are, we also retain that extraordinary power of freedom, which we call choice or free will. It's our heritage, so to speak. It's an intrinsic part of consciousness. So your mind, your intelligence, is in, you know, your sense of self. In countless ways understands its own freedom and resists being bound. So, you know, for instance, one thing that I watch with fascination is this tendency in the financial world for these guys to come up with all sorts of crazy methods for making more money, you know, that like bundling everybody's mortgages together and selling them to somebody else. You know, what are they called? These radical financial instruments, they're called. And they do it because they can, because as expressions of human consciousness, of which is divine consciousness, they are free and they make choices. So, and in, you know, in many traditions it said God gave us free will. We get to choose good or evil. We get to choose light or dark. It's not that God gave us free will. It's that God is free will and we are God. And I just want you to hold that thought for a moment. God is free will and we are God. And one of the places where we characteristically experience this freedom is inside our own awareness. So, in other words, our consciousness, our awareness, even though limited, you know, even though it's not as free as hers is, because it's limited, nonetheless, operates in radical freedom and in radical creativity. So let's just take a moment here and tune into our own individual slice of Chitti Shakti, the power inside awareness. So you can find a posture, close your eyes. Just let your awareness come to the breath and feel how your body feels at this moment. If you're listening to this call while driving or walking, I'm not going to suggest that you don't close your eyes, but I think many of you can do this practice even with your eyes open, though I'm going to suggest that you perhaps set aside some time when you're not walking or driving to really get into it in meditation. So just begin by becoming aware of the sounds. This is, of course, a great classic meditation practice. So become aware of the sounds, very gently letting them flow in and out. Become aware of the places where your body touches the seat or your feet touch the ground. The weight, the experience of pressure, the sensation of pressure, the light sensation of touch where your clothes meet your skin, and the even lighter sensation of your skin meeting the air. Become aware of the breath. Notice the touch of the breath as it flows in, and notice where you feel it in your body, how your body moves when the breath rises and falls. And become aware of thoughts. For many of us, thoughts just constantly keep rising and falling. And see if you can let your attention cycle from sound to sensation to thought. Centering on the breath when you get lost. Recognizing perhaps that you're actually being breathed. Breath being a link between the Supreme Consciousness and our subtle mind consciousness. Now see if you can bring your attention backwards, if you can turn your awareness back on itself. If you can look through, so to speak, if you can focus through the sounds, the thoughts, the sensations, and begin to recognize that vibrant field of knowingness that is actually holding all these layers of your experience. This act of turning attention back on itself, it's called self-recursion, is actually the fundamental activity of consciousness. Consciousness is conscious of itself. Awareness is aware of itself. And for us, it's really an activity of turning back. It's often called becoming aware of awareness. Becoming aware of that in you that is conscious that you're listening to me. That in you that knows you're hearing sounds. That knows you're experiencing sensation. Now, see if you can investigate something else. Notice how when you turn your awareness back on itself, especially if you've done this practice a bit, there's a sense of a kind of a ground or even of a screen, a kind of a field. What you can start to notice is that the awareness that is actually the ground of your experience has a very particular quality to it that is actually, in one sense, always the same. Awareness is a field. And what you might also see is that this field, this awareing, it's not actually still. It scintillates. It vibrates. It has dynamism in it. One of the words that some of my Kashmiri Shaiva friends use for this is dynamic stillness, your field of awareness has a capacity for stillness, and as you go deeper into yourself, you feel that stillness more and more, but it also constantly moves. And if you look into your awareness, you may see, you may notice that stuff is always arising in it. That is, thoughts keep popping up in it. You're hearing my voice, and it's creating ripples in that awareness. And and what happens as these images and thoughts come up, as sound and sensation are perceived, is that the field takes the shape of these thoughts and feelings and perceptions. So just see if you can notice. This capacity for knowingness, for awareness, this awareing, and notice that it's constantly creating. It has this innate dynamism. Something is always happening inside the field of your awareness. I'm just going to ask you to stay in that examination. Your attention will be drawn to a thought or to a sensation or to my voice. And you can also, at the same time or at a different moment, just make this gesture of turning your attention back on itself. So these two qualities in the field of your own awareness, the field of what we experience as our own mind, our own interior consciousness, these two qualities are actually what allows consciousness to be conscious of itself. There is this experience of consciousness as a kind of a field, a screen, which in a certain sense just lies there. It just is. when you really tune into your own awareness, there is very often an experience that you've tuned into a very familiar place of rest. Not all of you may be feeling that now, but many of you have that experience now, and many of you have it at other times. And if you don't, I'm pretty much going to guarantee you that you'll have it through your practice in this course. And that ground quality, which is contentless, and which is also the basis out of which the thoughts and the perceptions emerge, that ground quality in your awareness is called in Sanskrit the quality of illumination. The Sanskrit word is prakasha, light or illumination. And that ground quality is associated with the Shiva aspect of consciousness, what we could call the divine masculine or the presence at the heart of reality. But the quality of active attention, this ability to focus, this innate ability for creation, so to speak, to manifest inside that field, whether as thoughts or as perceptions. And if you're very, very versed in this practice, through grace, you may see that what you experience as a perception is not happening because something is coming to you from somewhere else, but is actually happening inside this screen. That is my voice. Even though I'm in Carmel Valley, California, and you may be in Melbourne, Australia, my voice is actually being experienced inside. And what else is being experienced inside is the capacity to pay attention, the capacity to have an experience, the capacity to be aware that you're having an experience. And the Sanskrit word for this active attention, this ability to focus, is vimarsha, which means self-awareness. And that is the quality of chitti shakti, the divine feminine, the creative dynamic aspect of consciousness. Attention, which is, as we all know, absolutely fundamental to our ability to know, desire, or do anything. Attention. Is the active aspect of consciousness. So our normal experience when we turn inside, and there are many, many things that manifest on the screen of awareness, I know. You may see lights, you may find yourself thinking about the laundry, you may have a vision of your ex-boyfriend. There's so many creations that will occur inside your awareness. But let's say that this meditation is actually replicating in our limited way, and it can become deeper and deeper, such that over time, the sense of the ground, the substance, the field, becomes more and more deep and more still. And the sense of the creativity inherent in it begins to express itself as a blissfulness, as insight, as revelation. These two aspects in your consciousness, which, again, we'll continue to tune into again and again, are individual expressions of that vast, unlimited light and freedom, light and awareness that we call the Absolute, that we call the Absolute Consciousness, that we call Chitti Shakti. And one of the ways that the Shaivite sages have come to understand the nature of the Absolute has been by exploring their own experience, not just intellectually, but in deep meditation. Because to really grasp this, to really grok it, to really get it, it actually requires a deep turn inside. But here we are, awareness itself, attention itself, consciousness itself is the goddess, the supreme power. This is what Kshema Rajesh says. She's the incomparable power that is the source of all this. She's absolutely free. And she is the cause of everything. And what this tradition means by everything is everything. Everything from the highest heavens and what is beyond these heavens to the densest, most gnarly feelings of contraction, bitterness, resentment, anger, and to the physical world in all of its manifestations. She's the cause of the manifestation, the performance, the activity of everything. And this translation, the Chris Wallace's translation, uses the word performance. Other translations say cause. The word is hetuhu. The word performance is interesting because it implies something that I really love, which is that goddess is performing the manifestation of this world kind of the way a dancer performs a spontaneous piece of choreography, or the way an actor performs a monologue that's coming directly and spontaneously out of her inner being. In other words, the enactment of this universe, of this experience, is not something fixed. It's an activity. It's a performance. It's a display. It's a play. It's a work of art, because goddess consciousness is always described, is always seen as an artist. And that's part of the emotional tone of Kashmir Shaivism. It's about seeing this world and your life as an incredibly profound and gorgeous and ever-changing kaleidoscopic work of art. So whether we're talking about, you know, the angelic realms, and we are going to, in next week's class, discuss the levels of consciousness, whatever level of consciousness we're talking about, it's all arising and subsiding in her. And one of the commentaries says, when goddess opens her eyes, this, if you study the Spandakarikas, you know this, when she opens her eyes, the world appears. When she closes her eyes, the world dissolves. Sometimes it's the other way around. Another way of describing this process is that when she exhales, she breathes the world into existence. When she inhales, she breathes it back into herself. And one of the things that Kshema says is that when we say that goddess creates, manifest everything within herself out of perfect freedom, we mean that she manifests time and space. She manifests concealment. She manifests all the laws that the universe is subject to. So she's consciousness, awareness is the only cause. That is, nothing can exist that is not her. So the idea of cause and effect, you know, that, and this is a big idea in Indian philosophy, but the idea of cause and effect is actually a fiction because she is the cause and she is the effect. Another way that Kshema describes this process, the absolute freedom of consciousness, is by pointing out that she is that which is aware of everything. That is, she's the process of perception that allows you to, I'm sitting at my table and I'm looking at a lily, a yellow lily, and that lily is looking very vibrant because I'm giving my attention to it. What this text says is that the lily is not separate from my awareness, and if I look at the lily and then bring my attention back to the experience of seeing the lily, that is, to the one who is present to the experience of seeing a flower, I can start to recognize that the experience of the flower is actually happening inside my awareness. It's not happening outside my awareness because I could not experience the lily outside myself. You can only experience something through awareness. And again, that's something we'll be exploring as well. The third interpretation of the sutra, which is very important for us, is that once we get that whatever arises and subsides in this universe is arising and subsiding inside awareness, we also realize that our capacity to know ourselves, our capacity to know the truth, our capacity to become enlightened, as it were, is also caused by her. In other words, the mind cannot know itself. The body can't know itself. The mind and the body are expressions of her. And one of the things that we'll start to see as we examine this process is that the mind and the body are actually constantly arising and subsiding, depending on our state of consciousness, depending on our level of consciousness. One of my favorite spiritual teachers, Rupert Spira, gives this analogy, which is, it goes like this. Imagine that Mary is asleep in her bed in San Francisco, and she's dreaming that she's walking down a street in New York and that she is a woman named Jane who works as an assistant to the fashion editor of Vogue, let's say for the sake of creating an image. She's walking down the street in New York where it's freezing cold. Mary is asleep in her bed in San Francisco. As the character walking down the street in New York, let's call her Jane, she's having an entire experience. But it's happening in a dream. And the entire experience, Jane's entire experience of being in New York and having this particular life, and I know you've all had this experience of being in a life that's a dream life. You wake up and you're not in that life anymore. So that entire experience of Jane's life is contained inside her awareness, inside the dream. And this experience of dreaming a life is actually a kind of analogy, or it's the opportunity that we have to recognize something much deeper, which is that what we call my life in the waking state is also happening inside a container of awareness that is the dream of Chitti Shakti. It's the creation of awareness manifesting as you, as me. It's the creation of a life that we call my life, but which actually is her life. So whatever, this is what the tradition really says, that the experience of enlightenment, of self-recognition, occurs any time we notice that, this is what Kshema Raja says, the color blue or gold or green, the feeling of happiness, the experience of the body, whether it's having a pleasant experience or an unpleasant one, the experience of the breath, all of these perceptions and experiences can be recognized as coming out of divine awareness and returning back to it. If we're willing to keep turning attention back on itself so that, you know, for example, this is a practical application of this teaching. If you're having an emotional experience, such as feeling psychically uncomfortable, for instance, maybe you're confused by what I'm saying, or maybe you had a difficult encounter at work, or maybe your back hurts. So if you are to decide that you're going to allow your awareness, your attention, to turn inside and focus on that experience, focus on the felt sense of your back hurting, or focus on the actual felt experience of confusion. What does confusion feel like? Or focus on the felt experience of looking at this flower. If you focus on the felt experience itself, and let's say a feeling of confusion or a feeling of happiness or a feeling of spacing out, if you just focus your awareness on how that feels and then take the backward step of recognizing that your awareness is actually able to hold this perceptive experience inside itself. That is, you can become aware of the way it feels to be confused, or the way your back pain feels, so that there is both now, there's the experience of the back pain or the sensation of confusion, and then there's also the experience of awareness holding it. And by holding these two things, for want of a better word, together, holding them in the same space, and beginning once again to turn your attention back from the perception or from the emotional feeling state to that which is holding it in awareness, there is a gradual shifting so that you begin to experience yourself as that awareness. So we can realize and experience Chitti Shakti through turning our attention from what is known to what knows it and allowing these things to be held together. The point being that this profound consciousness is not only the cause of everything, it's also your own self. And it can be known by turning attention back on itself. And not only that, when we do that, when we turn our attention back on ourselves and look into the awareness that is us, we experience contentment, we experience fulfillment, we experience ananda. The divinity that is your own self is meant to tell us that awareness, divinity, and the self are three different words for one and the same thing. So, chittihi swatantra, vishva siddhi hetuhu, supreme consciousness is the cause of everything. And in being the cause of everything that appears, she is also the cause of our capacity to recognize it. So let's just take another moment to tune into the breath. To become aware of the sensations and the sounds. And to turn our attention back on itself. To sense the knowing awareness that allows us to experience these perceptions. See if you can hold this extraordinarily enlightening thought. All these forms, thoughts, people, trees, flowers, houses, are just, not just, they are full expressions of one single undivided field in which that which is utterly subtle, which is power itself, condenses to become what appears dense, so that everything that is experienced is a different form of the same thing. You know, the great analogy is, you know, just as waves in the ocean are made of ocean, just as bracelets and rings made of gold are all gold, just as clouds arising and subsiding in the sky are made of vapor, are made of sky, in the same way, all the waves and particles and neurons and dendrites, all the cells, bone cells, blood cells, cells of soil, space dust, hydrogen, oxygen, all of these apparently different biochemical and information cells, they're all part of the same one thing. They're all, to use the terminology of contemporary field theory of quantum mechanics, they're all entangled. They're all completely entwined with each other. So your breath, as you know, you probably know, is breathing in particles that existed in this cosmos billions of years ago. You're completely entangled, you're completely connected to everything. So as the breath flows in and flows out, just allow yourself to, as it were, assimilate your experience at this moment, what you're hearing, what you're sensing, what you're feeling. And with your eyes closed, if you're sitting in such a way that it's safe to close your eyes, see if you can simultaneously stay present to the awareness that holds all this, and also enjoy the extraordinary creative fact that this awareness is manifesting as all these particulars of your physical, emotional, sensate, mental experience. Shema says, it is the blessed goddess who is nothing but awareness, pure and free, who vibrates as the various infinite worlds, she is that unique reality that can appear as the substance of all experience, that can appear as many without ever losing her wholeness. Just as your awareness, though limited, can hold so many objects of perception and yet never lose its identity as the knowing substratum of your experience. So allow yourself right now to be with your experience, however it is. Allowing thoughts to arise, but doing your best not to get lost in them. Allowing your attention to cycle between sound and sensation and thought. And allowing your attention, when it falls on a thought or when it becomes aware of a sensation, allow your attention to be present to your experience kindly, lovingly, sweetly, so that you're not trying to push anything away. You're not trying to focus on anything in particular. You're actually enacting the gesture of Chitti Shakti, being both the ground within which everything appears and the creative urgency that arises inside that field in the form of thoughts and perceptions. Just let yourself be with your experience, with the recognition. All of this is within me. And that me within which all of this exists is her. You can't grasp her with the mind. But you can open to allowing her to reveal herself. When we recognize the freedom of consciousness, when we really recognize the freedom of consciousness, when we recognize that it's Chitti Shakti, the goddess consciousness, who's becoming us, then we also recognize that she is the source of our joy and she's the source of our enlightenment, of our freedom. She's the source of both worldly enjoyment, skillfully living life, and she's the source of recognizing the divine origin of everything. That is, it's she who gives us success in life, and she who gives us self-realization. And remember, because goddess has become everything, she is also available to manifest as harmony, as romance, as challenge. She's available to show up as all the stuff in your life that gets up in your face and shows you where you haven't quite developed the skills you need for smooth functioning. She can become your path. She can show up as the love you feel for all the things you love, because they are her. And more than that, she's the refuge, the awakened awareness that holds you, that is present for you, even when it feels like everything's falling apart. So as we go into the week ahead, and you'll be receiving a homework assignment tomorrow, this class will be available for download in the morning. Deb usually gets it up pretty immediately. The listserv is open, and among your homework assignments will be a study guide that you can work with a partner. It's a very beautiful aspect of this course, to actually allow Deb to give you a partner whom you can have conversations about these teachings with. There's something about holding these teachings in the presence of another human consciousness which enhances them profoundly and also gives us a way to share our insights and our experiences and our questioning. So if you're interested in that, let Deb know and she'll assign you a partner in your time zone or in a close time zone. And also do notice the listserv and share on the listserv, I know that listservs are an outmoded technology, but I like them because they show up in our mailbox, and because the threads that show up on the listserv allow me to interact with you, because very often on the listserv we share experiences, ask questions, and it's a situation in which everyone can speak within that context. So thank you so much for being with us. We'll be deeply in touch over the next week. Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week. Namaste. Chitti Swatantra Vishva Siddhi Hetuhu. Everything in your experience is arising and subsiding within her, manifested on her own screen. And she is all that. Namaste.